This is Improvised Radio Theatre with Dice, with me, Michael Kuehl.
And me, Roger Bell West.
We have returned from our summer holidays. It hasn't quite cooled down, but today is slightly better than yesterday. We may hope that we will not be fried any longer.
I can bear to close the windows, briefly.
Well, the whole Thames Valley is, as far as I can tell, turning into a roast pork. All the flies can eat. I spent the early part of this past month at StabCon. I've resolved that it is going to be my last StabCon, which is sad since I've been going to it since the 1980s, but my aged joints just aren't up to the journey and the hotel beds and the chairs in most sites. The chairs. Why do they make them just too short for tall people? Especially too short for tall, fat people. I feel persecuted, I've got to say this.
Are Freemasons short and thin? Not that I've ever noticed.
They may be maybe they're short and fat. I don't know. I never knowingly shaken hands with one. Nice chaps, though they doubtless are. When we have to share the location, they sort of look at us very puzzled and wonder about us. As would I if I didn't know what we were up to. And I still look like as puzzled when I know what we are up to.
Meanwhile, right. Several people have sent us money, and we thank you very much for this. We don't know whether you're Freemasons, and we're not asking. But thank you to John Hagen, Brett Evel, Robert Wolfe, Glenn Lewis, and Joseph Reynolds.
We thank you. And we say, who will help the widow's son? At those of you who may be Freemasons there, just to show off that I've read a bit of lore. This month we're going to be talking about when there's too much lore, when there's too much rules, when there's too much anything, and about the games which really we've decided not to give a try.
Even though we might like to.
Yes, we'll probably talk about some of the ones we really don't want to even look at in the first place, because we're prejudiced that way. So, onwards. This is a bundle of holdings supplemental for Improvised Radio Theatre with Dice on the 28th of July 2026. Hello. This is Michael back at the microphone to record, after the main part of this episode was recorded, a mention of a bundle of holding. I'm on my own at the moment because Roger is off packing to go and conquer the world of ukulele, or maybe it was Finland or something like that. So, we do receive in advance a notice of what the bundle of holding is going to be offered, and we do get free samples, which we're reasonably grateful for, but we only mention the things that we think are going to be of interest to us, of interest to you, or possibly just of use and interest to people in general. And it would probably be blasphemous if I did not mention and promote this particular bundle of holding, because it is GURPS again. And as you know, one of our mottos on this podcast is, we quite like GURPS. So, this is being issued in advance of Steve Jackson Games putting out a new version of GURPS to be called the 4th Edition Revised. It will combine the two big books of the core set of the 4th Edition into one even bigger book, including a few additional tweaks and bits and a few clarifications here and there, but not being a complete rewrite. It is something that I suspect is mostly going to go to enthusiasts like me and Roger. And so Bundle of Holding is repeating some of its earlier offers about just about all of the GURPS and adding all of the other GURPS that it didn't get around to the last time, on cheap offers in advance of Steve Jackson doing a refurbishment. And in this pre-refurbishment sale, there is the core set, which contains the two big books, as I mentioned, And on top of that, I think a lot of gun stuff. The one new offer is going to be Infinite Worlds, which is the first setting that was released for GURPS 4th edition, and which attempts to be a meta setting, a mega setting, in which all the GURPS worlds can run in parallel. And it will also have a lot of the PDF published worlds, which are which have been printed underneath that label. Then it's going to go on and offer fantasy, including both the fantasy genre book and their core fantasy setting, which is Banestorm, which I really like. And following that, there will be offers of combat action, more gun stuff, which I really don't need. And then the past offers of GURPS Space, GURPS Supers, and GURPS Horror. Now, if you are a person who, for some inexplicable reason, has been shy of taking a look at GURPS, this is the best opportunity you're going to find for doing so. And if you are a GURPS enthusiast, such as I am, you may find there's stuff in here that you've never managed to get around to picking up, and which you would now have an opportunity to do so. I don't say this is the final opportunity. This stuff is going to be staying in print, at least available as PDFs, I think, for some considerable time, until the mythical day comes when GURPS 5th edition is launched. I recommend it to you on those grounds, and we hope you manage to find something useful in it. This will run, the core set offer will run until the 17th of August, and I believe the others will trail off in the days following that. All of these will be on offer by the time you get to hear this, so please go and have a good look and poke around. Now, on to the thing we recorded previously. Onwards! I mean backwards. One of those two.
There are many games out there, and we run a lot of them, but there are some that we just don't feel we can run. I don't mean we don't like them. There are lots of games we don't like, but games that we don't think we would do well.
Yeah. I think they come in several categories, and triaging the games that we don't think we can do from the games we think we can do is important, given that there are growing numbers of games and only a shrinking amount of our lifespans left.
Indeed.
So, I think I've got some categories here. There's theme incompatibility. There's system incompatibility. There's sheer terror at the scale of something. Which comes in both theme and system varieties, and there's it won't work with my group, which is a bit of a cowardly category because I could actually go out and form specific groups for specific games, but it is a lot easier if you can fit something to a regular group that you have access to.
Yeah, I'll come back to that with one of my examples, but generally I am mostly in accord with the groups I play with, because otherwise I wouldn't be playing with them regularly, but sometimes they feel more strongly about something than I do.
Yeah, and sometimes they are lying buggers, and they tell you, oh no, we never want to do that again. And then if you ask them, even a year later, they will have changed their minds. Because they have even shorter memories than I have nowadays.
Oh, but we asked you for this last time. No, you didn't. You said you would rather set fire to your fingernails than play it.
I think the subtlest one I came across was, we've done that already, with a tone of voice which implies we never want to do that again. And I operated under that misapprehension for some considerable time. Until I threw something optimistically into the prospectus for the next thing. And they said, oh yes, let's do that. That was fun. Okay, so what have we got for theme.
I'm not sure many things will fit strictly. Okay, there is one I can think of that will fit strictly into one of these categories, for me at least, though clearly not for you, because you have run it and do run it, is RuneQuest, and specifically Glorantha. I'm fine with the system. I like the setting, theme, whatever. Well, not it's not at the top of my list, but I don't have a problem with it. But there is just so much.
I think that we must start a new category, which is the law barrier.
Well, I think that fits into scale, really.
Well, go on.
I am well aware that there are introductory things one can do as a new GM. You know, one can say, here is this particular area, there's a reasonably manageable amount of lore about this that applies to this particular area, we can do stuff in that. This is fine, but it seems a waste. I mean, there is so much of the world out there. The example of one that I do feel reasonably au fait with is Traveller, because I got the Traveller Library data books in the mid-80s had time and energy and all the rest to read and absorb them.
All right, this is something we have to admit, that the games you and settings you master in your youth are going to be with you for the rest of your career, and that is not always a good thing. Sometimes you are stuck in bad habits. But the things you pick up. But Roger, the stuff that's available for Traveller now, the contradictory stuff, the different interpretations by different companies and different authors.
Yes,
miles deep.
There is a self-making excuse, because if you are caught in an inconsistency with modern Traveller, you can just shrug your shoulders and say, "Eh, must be mongoose editing," and nobody is ever going to prove you wrong.
All right. Well, the motto here for all nervous GMs out there is your Glorantha or Irith or known space will vary. You can't. In some cases, there's too much information. In other cases, for example, with Irith, the world of the Banestorm in GURPS, there's too little information and you have to build on it. Mm. I've run Irith related games since the 80s, and I've got a lot of my own background built into it and a lot of their background that I've incorporated and made use of. And I'm not sure that Steve Jackson Games would recognise what I'm doing with it. But nonetheless, you have to allow your setting to vary.
Yeah, another example of that that I think I've mentioned recently, but just say in passing, when I was running the Firefly game for you, I had the Firefly wiki is out there, and if something has appeared in official Firefly media, it is written up on that wiki.
Yeah.
So I can look up a particular planet, and on that page is everything that has ever been officially stated about that planet.
In some cases, it's just, this is its name.
And oh boy, it ain't much. And so, but at least at that point, I know that I'm going outside the bounds of anything that was ever said.
Yeah. Yes, I would classify Firefly as tragically and due to network buggering about, have a very incomplete setting.
I would, I would digress a bit and say I think being cancelled when it was the best thing that could have happened to it before the writers got entirely up themselves.
You failed, they were heading in that direction.
Absolutely. The film is only evidence of this. But true. Anyway, that is a digression. So, yeah, great big worlds are, in general, the thing that worries me, except for the one that I have retained from when I was a younger and more energetic gamer. Han, Tikumel, similarly.
Yeah. I think it helps if there's a central creator, at least in the early stages. Han, I am not at all sure about it. I've collected a lot of it, but it does not appear to have the unifying voice, and the fact that they decided they were going to write everything up to the start date and then not go any further, that also may have frozen it in time.
The impression I've got of it from when I have dabbled in it is basically fairly realistic medieval, except there's a little bit of magic out there.
Yeah, and some gods.
I remember people recommending it when it was coming out piecemeal, as you know, this book you could just use as a realistic medieval manor. Just ignore the bit about magic over here.
I think it falls down at the politics and the medieval custom part. I think there are things that they've put in there which they haven't bothered to develop.
Yeah.
For Glorantha, they put hill-dwelling clans in, and then they bothered to develop them and make them more detailed and real. But there are clans in Harn, and not a single clear definition of what a clan is in law or custom, which is one of the reasons I've only done a few things where I've taken adventures that I wanted to do and put them on Harn, because that gives me a background, a geography and names of places that I could put I could put into effect. But yeah, there are some places that you can't cram into your skull anymore, and no easy way to do that by stages.
That said, there quite possibly are easy ways if one is. I imagine that a serious fan of any of these settings would say, no, it's fine. You just take this bit over here, which is defined in just this book, and you'll be and you're fine. You're sorted. The trick is working out just where that is.
Yeah, there was a recent thread about how do I use Banestorm on Steve Jackson Collins, and everybody said, just Aratair, or just the Northlands, or here, use my favourite bit. And in one case, here, use the fan-published scenarios I have published, which is fair enough, and is great community support and a thing that you want to happen. But, yeah, there are things that I am terrified of. I'm finding hard to cram in. I tried to read Earthdawn recently.
I
like the system, but I felt maybe I would have picked it up as I went along, but I'm getting old and I'm getting lazy.
I don't have strong feelings about the system. I remember the original one being mildly mathematically amusing but not inspiring. But again, the background of that, there's clearly a lot out there that they cared about very deeply. And yeah, it would be okay, probably less effort to load that into my head, but at that point I'm saying, well, what is special about this fantasy setting? There may well be answers, but that's not how it is usually sold. It's sold as, here is this great game, play this great game.
Yeah, this is a failure. And I will admit that when people publish things that are about settings I give a damn about, and they're not consistent, and I can clearly see with my deep and cranky knowledge that they haven't got something right, then I tend to cringe, and I'm a bad gatekeeper. But in my own defence, I'm only a bad gatekeeper internally.
Yeah,
I apologise to the person I was slightly rude to on Takeli Lee yesterday, if he's listening.
I think it would be fair to say that these are not insuperable barriers, but they are barriers that we choose not to super.
Yeah.
Because we have alternatives.
Because we have things that we know better.
Yeah.
That brings me on to system barriers. I'm going to put forward as my a paradigm of this, Exalted.
Okay, I have never tried it, so...
All right, I can kvetch for a while about it, but suffice it to say, I tried playing the intro scenario, I think, twice with two different groups, and I couldn't play that, and I also couldn't make characters. Each type of exalted person, touched by a different god or type of gods, has a different set of special super-duper powers called charms. And charms have dependency trees, and they do all sorts of different exciting-sounding things which you're not going to understand at all until you've mastered the system. And creating characters, and even playing pre-prepared characters, is just too dense. I love the lore. I like the lore, and if I felt I felt I could master the system, I'd go for a dive into one of the many, many locations and see if I found it fun. But I can't cram the system into my head, and it won't work.
This sounds to me as though it might be a better fit, at least for you, for something very lightweight and freewheeling, and your power is basically, you were touched by the god of fire, you can do fiery things.
I think that would be a fine idea for a reimagining or reworking of Exalted, but a gritty system that depicts characters differently according to their different powers and natures is a joy if you can get it to work, and I think Exalted is written for that sort of system. It also involves rolling huge amounts of dice, which is a giveaway for that sort of thing. But if I were trying to create my own setting in which the gods touch people and give them powers, yes, I'd use something lighter. I would probably use, if not fate, then perhaps something like Rain. Rain is a good example of a system with a new system that I first met all right back in the 90s. Well, I wasn't quite as cranky as I am now. But it's something I can pick up and something I can tweak to my own desires. My players don't like it, but that's their problem.
Yeah, I mean, I think it would be fair to say that I feel that way about GURPS. I haven't approached it as a new player would have. Here are these nearly 500 pages of book, and that's just the basic set. I have absorbed it over the years. And yeah, there are over 11,000 published pages for GURPS.
It is.
I wrote a search engine. I know these things.
Not all of it you're going to use, and not all of it you're going to need.
The GURPS I actually run, I put in a part of the Cunning article a while back, is basically, player says, I try to do this. I say, okay, roll against that. Player rolls. Continue. The reason I like it, and this is another digression really, is that if I do want to lean on it to say what actually happens in this situation, it will be there and have an answer for me. But if I don't want to lean on it, it won't break things if I just make a call. But anyway.
That is its best design feature.
I think for me that if I see a system I don't like, then my usual response is to port the setting to a different system or rebuild the system because I am that way inclined.
Yeah, well, whereas my inclination is to take the core idea of it and put it into a system that I know rather than take everything that system has accumulated out of the enthusiasm and creativity of the original creators and the developers, and put it into something that I like and I think I can apply it to this, or I can use the core idea like that. There are systems and settings that I want to use, which bring both, and which brings me to Ars Magica, and that brings me to my third great barrier, which is I don't have a group that fits with this. Or rather, I have groups, but not all of them are going to be enthused about the core idea of Ars Magica, a community of mages and their hangers-on, who are trying to both prosper in the mundane world, in the magic world, and in the politics of the Order of Hermes, in the Middle Ages, in Europe, mostly. And that strikes me as fun and something that I could do, but whilst each of my permanent groups has some people who know the system and who like the system, and some people are prepared to try. I also have players who will not get it at all, and I don't want to kick them out of the group because they're useful and I like them and they're my friends, so there.
My experience when you tried the play-by forum, and I'm absolutely not saying this is your fault, it's quite possibly mine, is we were just bogging down in more and more detail that I could not see a way to do anything else until that was resolved. So,
yeah.
But anyway.
I'm willing to take some of the blame for that. That was my second attempt to run Ars Magica by forum, but by remotely anyway. And I did not do well either time. Maybe I could do well round a table, but I think I'm going to have to get an online group if I'm ever going to do it. And I've got an awful amount of stuff, and I've ordered the revised edition. And oh my word, I'm a terrible collector. I've never
seen it. So I agree with your categories, but I think this example at least rather sprawls across them, because that is Monster Hearts.
Go on. I've tried it once and I didn't enthuse, so you tell me about it.
And first of all, a thing I keep saying is that I want soap operatic style play. Mm. But I think maybe I don't mean by that what other people do. What I want is, take a basically action-adventure oriented TV series like Stargate SG-1.
Yeah.
And every so often, you know, particularly once the character's been built up a bit, you can have a half episode or an episode which is basically comic relief, where they are sorting out their various personal beefs. They are saying, essentially, yes, this is a ridiculously high-stress job that we're doing, let's kick back a bit and do something else.
Yeah.
That is the sort of thing I'm looking for. You know, we will have the unwise romances and all the rest of it, but not as the only thing that's done. I have read, I've listened to one Monster Hearts run by the Esoteric Order of Gamers. I've read in Ever and Anon about others, and it always seems to me that there is the promise of an actual plot, an actual problem to be solved, but almost no progress in solving it because the personal drama takes precedence. And as far as I can see, the game is designed to do that. The game is also designed to end itself very specifically when somebody gets to the end of the experience track.
And becomes a monster permanently?
No. I mean, you can carry them on, but basically that is the end of that season of the show, in effect. And if that character does come back, then they will come back different.
Okay. Well, this is what Robin Lee Laws says, puts drama against procedural. And he has done games, which I've tried and not liked, which are entirely drama, entirely people talking to people and trying to work things out. Now, at the moment, I'm running a magical school scenario, which is mostly interactions of the pupils with their teachers and with each other, and with the people in the other house who want to do them down. But it also has adventurous things, kidnappings, political movements in the background. I think I'm doing more of the personality and interaction stuff than I normally do, because it's a school. It's a school stroke university saga, and that's apparently that was when I was supposed to do the angst and things. I must have missed that session.
The other thing of this is it does suggest at least the pure soap opera suggests a lot more in party conflict than I feel comfortable with. But that's again my limitation.
Yeah, I had said with regard to Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the television series, and or the sessions of the role-playing game that I ran, that it had action, it had geeky stuff, the fan service stuff about, ooh, so that's what that meant, and ooh, they're bringing that mythology in, I don't know about that. That you have to service the geek amongst your fandom. It had comedy stuff way through, and it also had the heartbreak and the moral dilemma and the challenges and failures of the main cast to live up to their potential and be heroes. And all of that combined together, balanced together, made a very satisfying setting and set of possibilities. And I think that if you can create a system that will do all of that and do it simply and well. Well, I wasn't entirely convinced by the cinematic union system, but it worked at a certain level. It's more complex, say, than Fate. And a lot more complex than something like Rhesus. But it did seem to work for that particular setting, and may have done for some of the other settings too.
I don't think I played any of their games. They did Conspiracy X with broadly a similar system, didn't they?
I think so. I think that was them. Too many games, too little time.
But
too little brain.
So on the rules leg of this, I'm not a fan of Powered by the Apocalypse. Several of the people I would be most likely to play this with dislike it far more and might well be just unhappy about playing that game at all.
Because?
It's... Now you put me on the spot, sir.
Well, that was sort of my intention, yes.
I think it is because where I expect the rules to kick in a role-player game is to say, okay, I'm trying this thing. Does it actually work?
And in that you need an implied physics system.
And some people are better at it than others, and possibly by a large extent. Whereas it seems to me that what Apocalypse specifically is doing is saying, how does the story progress from here, which is not quite the same thing. In particular, the partial success will often say you can fail and get away with it, or you can succeed but something bad happens.
Yeah,
that is what I went to the rules to get an answer to. If I were happy to decide whether I was going to succeed or fail, I would not be needing to roll the dice in the first place. And you know, I would be doing collaborative storytelling, which is fine, but it's not what I look for in a game.
Well, it's what you have is a limitation of the stuff that the players can do, a categorization of the stuff that this sort of story lets the players do. And then you have to run with that. I've always found myself butting up a bit against the bars of that cage whenever I run Powered by the Apocalypse stuff. But its virtue is that it has a genre that you can sign up to and say, yes, I want to play this. And it has a great speed of character creation and replacement. And a possibility for further expansion. You have to stretch the system, and you have to get buy-in by all the players around the table. I find saying to my other players, well, he's only had a partial success, what nastiness can I throw in his path? And they'll come up with something. They're very kind that way.
Well, I've talked before about my generally preferring to stay in character rather than having to drop out to editor stance.
Yeah, to it's chief script writer stance. But as the GM, I'm never out of. I'm never entirely out of.
But as a player, this is what I'm thinking of.
Well, that's true. You're right. That isn't a question I should put to the players, except the rules rather encourage you to.
As far as I can see, the rules strongly suggest that the player who has made the role should suggest something that might go wrong.
Yeah, but if they fail, I would tend to throw it open to the table.
And this is a yet another digression. I don't know why Genesis works for me, even though it is asking for this. I mean, you roll a success and two, what are they called? The drawback thing,
yeah.
Threats. That's it. You roll a success and two threat, and this is basically you have succeeded in what you were doing, but something bad has happened.
Yeah.
And for Genesis, I don't find that annoying. Partly, I think, because there is this table that says, okay, you can pass one of those on as a penalty die to your mate who's going to be doing stuff next. And similar. There is always that, I don't want to do that thinking right now, I can use the standard option. So, yeah, anyway.
I think I should say that my problem with Genesis is that I find the mental model it provides me of the world to be squishy.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It doesn't give me an idea of scale, and it doesn't give me a sense of what this character is. It's just too generic and undetailed for me to find anything to get my teeth into. And that's my problem with Genesis. I'm not afraid of it. I've tried it and I didn't like it.
It's fair enough. The third leg of my concern with Monster Hearts, and this is quite possibly purely a me thing, is that, yeah, I'm in my 50s, my players are mostly in their 50s. Playing young teenagers having unwise sex feels faintly creepy.
Yeah, I'm in my 70s. Most of my players are in their 50s or their 70s. And, double. I'm not sure there was ever a time in my life in which sexually aroused teenagers, and is there any other kind? All right, there must be a few.
When I was a teenager, it would have been embarrassing but not creepy, I feel.
When I was a teenager, it would have been. It always was embarrassing. And therefore, why would I want to go back to my teenage years and relive them? I did not have the ideal. I don't think anybody has the ideal teenage years. Everybody's got some problems. It's
And everybody else is lying about how great their lives are.
Yeah, true, or were.
You notice that they're all lying, that's probably growing up.
Well, yeah. But the thing is, you're all raw edges and deep emotions that you don't understand, and you probably won't get some things explained to you until you're in your 70s. So the whole thing is not an attractive thing, but it is a genre that keeps coming out and keeps being popular. Whether it's popular with
teenagers... Remember Cyber Generation?
Sorry?
Remember Cyber Generation?
No, I never admitted... I saw the cover and did not admit it to my mental store.
Basically, this was Mike Pondsmith telling the world that they were playing his, brackets, very successful game wrong. You're not supposed to be successful and competent and stuff. You're supposed to be the underdogs, so I've got to make a game in which you are the underdogs.
I'm sure there's delight in that, but only if the underdogs have a meaningful chance. Cthulhu, and that's already covered.
Yeah, but also, kids feel everything more strongly. Yeah.
Do they? All right.
Yeah, I was at Gen Con of the year. This was announced, and he was doing. Being fair to Mike, he is a great showman. And he basically had one of the meeting rooms doing this announcing. Was it launch or another? Anyway, saying essentially, here is this new thing. And the room was just dead.
Yeah.
No, we are not enthused about this, Mike. Tell us why we should be enthused. It's not working. Yeah.
I feel that many gamers are better at being the bold hero with the sword that goes ting than they are at being the tender lover or the responsible parent or anything like that. And I have players who I don't want to embarrass by putting them in a situation where teenage heartbreak or other things is the central thing that occurs in the game.
I was reading about recently.
This is another barrier, the barrier of embarrassment.
Yeah, I can't remember the game, but it was a setting in which when people meet their one true love for life, they know it. They both know it. And the way this particular game, the way this particular game handled it was, you get to play the one true love.
Your own one true love.
As well as your own character. So any questions of consent in that relationship, well, you must be agreeing to it because you are deciding what happens.
I cannot help but feel there are several uncomplimentary things I could say about that setup, but I cannot help but feel that the author has missed the point somewhat.
But it means if you want to do the tragic love story, you have a free hand to do it.
And you can just go over in a corner and play by yourself.
It's not the only thing the game is about.
Okay. Well, I think... Yes, I somebody said to me once that he didn't want to play a character based on himself, on an avatar game, because he played to play somebody different from the person he normally was. And I've followed that rule ever since, and I've never tried avatar games. Well, I think nearly never tried them since that time. But
I think you also do it
to talk to people who are being different than themselves. It's like Halloween is supposed to be. You go as who you aren't. And that is supposed to be, and I think is, part of the liberating experience. Yeah, there is a limit, as I've discovered with my own inborn cowardice, to how far you can move from your core self. But nonetheless, that's what you're trying to do, to take off your mask and put on a different one. At least when you roll the dice, when you're around the table.
Mm.
And I feel that sometime, that to be your character's true love, love is about discovery, I think. And about... We've run out of topics. If I'm here discussing what true love is.
The way I can see this working would be, in essence, that love story becomes something for the rest of the players at the table to enjoy.
Yeah, I think still that you would want, it would be fun to watch two of the players falling in love, but I have seen that work in the romance plots of LARPs, where the two lovers have been got together by random chance or by the referees putting matching playing cards or halves of playing cards into the player kits, and you have to go around and search and get to the point at which the other they'll show you theirs if you show you yours. Then yours, yeah, you know what I mean. And the and that can work, but then you're only doing that for three and a half hours, and you can play for the exterior signs of true love all that you want to and chew the scenery, and that can be fun. But sitting around a table, you have to go very carefully. I don't know what a game of Good Society might work that like, and I have never played it, so because I didn't understand it and because I was scared by my experiences with what's it called, Hill Folk, the drama system.
Yeah, that group side compatibility issue. Two of the players in the regular Watson Hall group have played Hill Folk and had a truly terrible time.
Was it the same terrible time?
Yes, it was the same game.
Oh, right, okay.
The recording is out there. Well, I don't think it's public anymore since Yogi shut down, but it's actually quite interesting because one can listen to the recording and they appear to be enjoying themselves, but their reaction at the end of it was, I never want to do that again.
Ah, well, that's actually very interesting.
I just think side issue to the romance thing, I have known a situation of the cliche of the girlfriend worrying about the player's character's relationship with another player's character, in which it was in fact justified, but that relationship was not healthy in the first place. So.
Oh dear, tales of romance and rolling dice. I don't know. There are two married couples in my Monday night group, and that can be awkward. But they never play lovers in the game. Indeed, it is an opportunity for them. Never mind. It is an opportunity for them to work out issues sometimes.
I'm just remembering that the cliche of board gaming couples is that they will help each other and so on. My experience of board gaming couples is that they will go far harder against each other than they will against any other player.
Oh, well, it's the quality of friends you have, my dear
Indeed.
Chap.
So, Monster Hearts is not going to be on my virtual table anytime soon. Another one, and I think this mostly comes under the system constraint, but not entirely, is James Bond 007. The system, I think, is about two-thirds of the way to brilliance, but not all the way. And hello, Brett, valued listener Brett Evel. I do know about Foresight, which takes the James Bond system and develops it, but it doesn't develop it in the direction I want. My main objection is to having to do all that multiplication on the fly.
Yeah, all right. That is anybody who's playing RuneQuest for any length of time gets used to multiplying things by 5%, 4%, 3%, 1%, and working out critical chances on the fly as well, but I can see that it's definitely a barrier. There are people who find addition too much for their role playing pleasure.
Mm. So the other thing, and the reason perhaps I haven't worked as hard on fixing it as I might, is that the setting, and I will confess I'm more familiar with the films than with the books, but it varies between laughable and fascistic.
Okay. Where do you find the fascistic elements other than Might Makes Right, which it does every time?
Well, essentially that. Never mind the villains. Everybody is a tool to be used in the service of the goals of my masters.
Yeah. Bond has very crude roots back in Bulldog Drummond days. He's a pure thug when he starts, with a certain amount of sentimental relationship towards some women. But Fleming was in the Second World War in intelligence. I think nobody ever dared let him out in the field. But
goodness, He genuinely appears to have believed that what he wrote in the books was how intelligence actually worked. There was a point where they sent him to the States just to stop him causing trouble. But, yeah, the other thing I think one should consider is you read pulp literature of the 20s and 30s, as I do, and it is very clear that they're not actually saying Hitler is right, because he is, after all, foreign. But they're definitely approving of this whole put the young people in uniform and give them a purpose which we will provide rather than this whole communist thing. They obviously have to moderate that a little bit, but only briefly.
You are not gonna get Ian Fleming or anybody of his generation looking at the cause they fought for in the war and supported all their lives and saying, well, maybe we go a bit too far sometimes.
Well, no, the cause they fought for in the war was exactly the opposite of the cause they had supported all their lives. That's the problem. They like everything being regimented and orderly. They just don't like the Germans doing it.
Mm. You're not going to get that sort of questioning until Len Dayton and John le Carré.
Yeah, which is, I will grant, a separate genre, but also not one I'm terribly interested in playing in. Now, again, I need to nod to Brett, because he has run James Bond for me, for you, I think.
For us,
there.
Yeah.
And that was, frankly, much more interesting than the impression I get of the setting as in general. So it's clearly doable. I'm just not at all convinced I'm the person to do it.
There is a whole separate genre. There are settings that I do not enthuse about. I've lost enthusiasm for the laundry files with the last books in the series.
Yeah, I was fading off rather earlier than that, I'm afraid.
Yeah, well, I need to have my pessimism about the setting confirmed before I give it up.
Hey.
But, yeah. I think our settings that don't fit our political or ethical sensitivities are another barrier, but we don't even feel nostalgia.
Yeah, well, that's more of the games we just don't really like. I have said in other places that essentially I'm just not interested in playing a serial home invader. So do not invite me to your dungeon bash. Neither of us is going to have fun with it.
All right. I have had fun with the dungeon bashes because they are so straightforward to run and to play in. All right. My finer self and my finer conscience would object to this, and nonetheless, the straightforward dungeon bash is fun. It doesn't make any sense if you think about it for any length of time.
What I'm more interested in, I suspect, would be something with a really strong external theme to it. And what, for example, what I've called the Distant Mirror Dungeon Bash, based on the Barbara Tuchman book. I mean, obviously, you know, Child Kings, Mad Nuns makes everything better. But the party might well be, oh, I don't know, junior priest and such raff and scaff as he can get hold of on his very limited budget, looking for a holy relic,
which just happens to be at the bottom of this extremely dangerous monster infested hole in the ground.
They're probably Cathars. Yes, well, I know it's not quite the right period.
Oh, hey, you can in a setting that fantastical, you can invent your own heresy.
They heretically feel that orcs should be allowed to live. Yes.
The orcs are people too is probably a heresy in that setting. They are not descended from Adam and therefore are not people. I could do that. I could write that.
One could make a fair point that Tolkien probably felt that way. Later buildings on Tolkien have had the redeemable orc, but I don't think there's any sign of it in the stuff he wrote himself.
Well, the orcs as portrayed in The Hobbit are definitely not only racist but classist as well, because they have accents like that and they talk like that. They do. I seem to recall. Or maybe that's trolls. I could be wrong. So, have we bashed this into shape?
Yeah, The reason I made that exclusion is, yeah, there are lots of games we don't like, and it's not fun, but here are games that I think I could potentially enjoy, but either the barriers to getting there are too high, or just there's too much that would be an obstruction that I would have to remove completely, and would it even be the right game anymore, or the same game anymore?
Yeah, even for games I don't like, I have a certain respect for the crafting of it and for the way the authors wanted to do it, even if it's a silly thing to do. I mean, I think Blue Moon, the romantic...
Blue Rose, yes, I was going Blue to suggest Rose. That as well. Blue Rose. There is a new edition which seems to largely drop the romance angle, which seemed frankly perverse. But, yeah, again, there is the embarrassment angle of it, but otherwise, yeah, interested.
Yeah, I think it has too many difficulties in the basic setup, but I don't want to fiddle with it. I would like, if I could play it, I would use what the authors have provided, but I don't think I can play it.
Is there an age version? I know somebody who will absolutely know the answer, but he's not here right now. And
I think the last version I read might have been an age.
And I quite like age.
Yeah, it has its own problems, but don't we all? Don't we all? Well, there. We've explained why we're not going to be doing things, and you can send us examples of why you're not going to be doing things, of categories and reasons that we have forgotten. We would gratefully receive them. So we won't do more things than we're not going to do now. All right?
But for now, onward.
And if we haven't been fried by the heat, we will be back in a month. If you wish to comment on anything wise or foolish that we have said this month, you can contact us by...
Leaving a message on the website or emailing podcast@tekeli.ly.
And we'll be back again, we hope, sincerely, in another month's time.